After all the jets are in the boxes and the clowns have all gone to bed, you can hear happiness staggering on down the street. Footprints dressed in red, and the wind whispers merry. A broom is drearily sweeping up the broken pieces of yesterday's life.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Leah Gilmore.
And that's Jimi Hendrix.
Yes, it is.
Who died on this day much too early, just at 27 years old. We're playing Jimmy in and out of our breaks today.
Right.
I remind you that WEAA, support for WEAA, is provided by AAA Mid-Atlantic. More information available at 866-4-GLASS-1. And Leah Gilmore is back in the house, second time in a month.
Yeah, we're doing this bi-weekly or twice monthly or a thing.
Something.
Something like that.
Of course, Leah, who co-hosts here, is also Center for Emerging Media's cultural editor. She's a social justice fellow at the Robert W. Deutsch Foundation and director and founder of Emoji Musica.
Right.
That's
yeah.
There's
a whole bunch to say, isn't it? It's great to be back here.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
On your way to Europe on Monday?
I'm on my way to Europe on Monday. I am.
Which country this time?
I'm going to Belgium and France. And so we're going to do a few. Actually, I'm going to do workshops. Then I'll be home for 10 days. I come back from 10 days. Then I'm going to do a concert tour, raising money for tuberculosis and leprosy victims. You know, I've done this for 14 years.
In Zaire?
In Africa, South America, and Asia. But we have a time. You haven't lived till you've heard a bunch of Flemish-speaking people sing "Oh Happy Day." Okay?
I want to hear that.
I've got the CD.
That's right. You got the CD. That's right. That's cool. So what are these workshops you're going to be doing?
So actually, gospel music workshops, you know, in the history of African-American musical traditions. And I'm going to be doing a couple TV shows talking about what we're going to be doing. And some lectures. And I'm going to Paris for my birthday, which is next week.
Okay. Nobody likes you anymore, Leah.
Nobody likes me anymore. Hey, but check this out, Mark. Paris is only an hour away. From Brussels.
Brussels.
From Baltimore.
Not from Baltimore.
Hey, get on Google. It's a second away.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Come on my morning walks with me. No, but it's you know, I feel very lucky, and we're doing a lot of good here in Maryland. You know, a lot of social justice good around a lot of progressive issues in which I'm involved in. And I just feel very, very lucky at this time. And hanging out with you and what we'll be talking about today is just part of that.
And let me introduce our guests.
Yes, why don't you do that?
I'll do that. And you can tell me, you can talk a bit about our guests here before we introduce them. Holly Gray is with us. She's founder and executive director of CUPS, Creating Unlimited Possibilities, a new coffee house in Holland's Market that trains and employs at-risk youth. And Claudia Smith, who is one of the original baristas at CUPS and is now a shift leader there and more. And Holly and Claudia, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. Good morning. Thank you.
So, first, Leah, describe what grabbed you about this when you first sent this email to the producers about why you wanted us to bring CUPS on the air.
I just saw a brochure. I was at the foundation, and the communication manager was telling me about this wonderful organization, but it's a cafe with great coffee. I mean, like a real place. And I was reading about their mission. And it's a nonprofit organization which seeks to empower at-risk youth to become financially independent and leaders within their families and their communities. But they also teach them to be entrepreneurial at the same time by using different ways. You use the arts.
Correct.
You know, you use many different other ways of empowering these young folks. So, Holly, if I can ask you, this is really innovative. I think, of course we have cafes, but this is a cafe that is not like your regular cafe. How did you think of this?
Well, it really came up
with a combination of things. I'm obsessed with coffee, and I can't live without it.
Oh, God. And welcome.
I know, right? Most of America. Right. But the problem is I had to drive a significant distance to get a decent cup of coffee and be in an environment that felt really comfortable and somewhere I could just hang out. Mm-hmm. I live in the Hollins Market area and also just was profoundly aware of how little opportunity there were for the kids to gain employment skills, to have opportunities that were readily available to me as a child or as a youth. So just how do I, you know, combine these two things? My three things. I love my neighborhood. I love the kids. And I love coffee. And it just all kind of came together. And I was like, let's do this. You know, a coffee house that employs at-risk youth and that provides a place for the community to be comfortable and feel welcome.
Right. And Claudia, you're one of the youth that have been involved in CUPS.
Yes.
So tell me about your experience there. What was it like? You're a leader now.
Yes. I actually just been promoted to be a manager yesterday, actually. Uh-huh. Holly, you know, dropped the news on me. But yes, I've been there about a year and a month now. I actually started living in the Hollis Market area, right across the street, actually, from CUPS. I was just walking. Then I seen a sign on a sheet saying, now hiring, just send your resume to Holly Gray, and we just could get started from there. Never expected me learning the difference between espresso and coffee grinds. Then you're dealing with a whole bunch of personalities walking in every day.
Oh, people want their coffee a certain way.
Yes.
It's like a coffee language, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it's been great. Then, you know, dealing with other kids working in there also. Mm. Then we have great managers. It's just been a great experience for me. Like, I love it. Then, I don't know. Like, it's like every day I walk in there, it's something new. Mm-hmm. It's something new. New people walk in there. Then, I don't know. I love it. I love it. And I'm glad I'm here. And I'm glad Holly choose me to be here.
So,
I am.
So what were you doing before you walked into that coffee shop?
Nothing. I was just, it was summertime. You know, I was just getting out of school.
Where'd you go to school?
I was going to Emerson Westside High School, yes.
Mm-hmm. You still there? You're gone. You're done.
No, this is my last year. I actually go to Woodlawn High.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And tell them where you want to go.
I want to go to college, Juilliard Arts in New York. Well, that's my plans. You know, we'll see in the future.
That's it. Now you claim it.
Yes.
Let's claim it. That's what you're going to do.
Yes.
Right.
But I just feel as though, like, this is where I need to be right now. Like, it's a great experience for kids and other people to come in and learn a lot. Then we have classes, like, once a month. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people come in there and talk about us, about, you know, building our own business and... We learn a lot. I'm so nervous right now. I really
don't
can't say.
No, you are exceptionally articulate.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that's great.
Thank you.
So you've seen people come in to talk to you about what?
Everything. Like, literally.
What was the last thing they did?
People talk to me about everything. example, the last thing somebody came in and talked about is... About themselves, really. Like, I don't know. Right. Like, people coming in and talk about their problems. Like, CUPS is really a place where you come and just be yourself and be comfortable and great food to eat. that's about it.
We do a lot of training or courses. We call them enrichment courses, where we talk about everything from financial literacy to how to fill out college applications, how to complete a resume, conflict resolution skills. And, you know, we really encourage them to also think about the future. So what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. Some people, the path is college. Some people might want to start their own business. So planning for the future and looking at that, because a lot of times we find that, you know, we're not looking past today. So here's Claudia, who has all this energy and she's so creative. You know, what are you going to do with all of that? Because she has so much potential to be whatever she wants to be. So how do we do that? And all of our enrichment courses are taught by volunteers from the community. So they come in, they volunteer a couple hours of their time every other Saturday. And we offer the classes to everyone that works at CUPS, but then if we have a class that can accommodate other people, we invite youth from within the community as well.
So this is a nonprofit?
Yes.
And how many young people are working there?
Currently we have 10, but we just finished also. This is a new year for us, so we just graduated some as well.
And that was my question. You've been around for a year and a half?
Year and a month.
Wow. So when you say you graduate some, that means that you have classes of young people that learn. How long does that last?
Most workforce development programs only last for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. It was very important to me that they have consistency in their life. And our program is a year. Which is very not typical of a workforce development program. So after the year of completion, we start trying to transition them into other forms of employment where they can either see an increase in wage, an increase in their role, so that they continue their employment.
Claudia, how do you feel different from walking in the door the first day to now being leadership within CUPS? How has it changed you?
First, I feel comfortable. At first, I barely can speak, was so nervous, thinking I mess up all the time. Now I'm confident about myself, confident about my employees, confident about my work, confident about my customers. Mm-hmm. A lot has changed since day one until now. Mm-hmm. A lot has changed. I can tell you that. I'm just so nervous right now. I am. But personally myself, I did not really know how to talk to people. Mm-hmm. You have to have great customer service when you walk into CUPS.
That's right.
And being around so many personnel, people coming in and have attitudes, you still have to have that smile, that pretty smile on your mm-hmm. face, And people, people coming in.
And she's a pretty girl with a pretty smile, let me tell you. We need you to actually go tell some people much older than you that that's how they should treat other customers.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
I don't always get that.
Yes. Let me go to the phone here, 410-319-8888, and 410-319-8888, as Leah Gilmore and I talking to folks from CUPS. And Phyllis, you're on the air.
Hi, Phyllis.
Thank you. Hello. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Just let you know how much I thoroughly enjoy your show. But enjoy the topic of your guest today, because I work at a place that works with women in transition in various stages of their lives. But our youth are the ones that we really need to start with. And so I applaud your Holly for what she's done with CUPS. And just listening to Claudia is such a blessing. So what I wanted to ask is, what is the age group of the youth that you employ at CUPS? And is it just youth from your neighborhood, or can any youth be referred to you for, the skills and opportunities that you offer?
Sure. Our target age range is 16 to 24. So it's a pretty wide range. It's fantastic because some of them are still in high school. You've got some that are, trying to figure out what they want to do in their early adult time. Mm-hmm. So there's a high receptivity to the program for that age range. But while we specifically target Holland's Market, we don't say that someone is ineligible because they don't live there. And certainly our classes and our programs are absolutely open to anyone. That's one of the challenges that I have is I would love to employ everybody. But the bottom line is I can't.
Literally the bottom line.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So we do try to make our programs accessible.
Do people find out about your programs?
Sure. We update our website, which is just cupscoffeehouse.com. Mm-hmm. There's an event page there. But also you can simply just drop me, pick up the phone and call, drop me an email, and I'd be more than happy to send you out the information. That's all on the website as well. But I'm pretty quick to respond, and it's, pretty easy to get connected to us.
All right. You're doing amazing work.
So when you work there, how many hours a week you work, and how many hours did you do this after school, night?
No, I actually do it in the mornings.
You do it in the mornings, before school?
Yes. Yes, because I go to night school at nighttime, so in the morning I take a morning shift.
And so I'm curious, in the world of arts, what's your passion? What do you want to do?
In life, or
in the world of arts,
I want to have my own business actually in New York City. Like I was telling you earlier, I want to go to Juilliard's for dancing and acting. So I want to have my own business, get a whole bunch of kids and, people from off the street who actually love dancing, because people don't notice that it's a lot of talented people in Baltimore City. Mm-hmm. You know, most of the cities in the entertainment business, you hear people coming from New York, California, mm-hmm. LA. You really don't hear much coming from Baltimore City. I just want to bring my city up and show people, like, it's really talented people in Baltimore.
I'd like to say a big amen to that.
Thank you.
And I love your goal.
Thank you.
Right. And I find that the arts is a wonderful way to give people confidence.
Yes.
It's to give young people confidence. I mean, we can see it. There's so much talent here, including yourself.
Thank you.
So, you know, keep going, keep on.
All right.
Keep going, keep going.
And what are the hours of CUPS?
We are open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday. And then we are open on Sunday from 9 to 2 for brunch.
Great.
You do the
cooking? You do serve food?
We do serve food. Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah.
Great
full
food.
Menu.
Great food. Great food.
And Holly, is that you cooking that food?
We all cook. There's not a single food. When you come in, you learn how to cook as well as make the coffee.
Okay.
This is interesting. So, and so where did this idea come from in the first place?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Where did the idea come from in the first place?
Honestly, it really was just a marrying of the things that I'm passionate about.
Did you have a coffee business before this?
No. I've never been in the restaurant business before.
And you weren't like a counselor for kids before this?
No, absolutely not. They teach me more than I teach them, I think, on most days. So.
Right. But just researching about what you do, the kids have such respect for you and what you're doing for them. So I think you've definitely found your, what is that, yellow parachute?
You know, the golden parachute.
The golden parachute. I knew yellow was close to gold.
There's some color close to that.
I didn't say purple.
Purple haze.
That's Jimmy. But tell me, I am more curious about the programming that you do. How often do you do it, you know? And give us an example of some of the people that have come in and what they've talked about.
Sure. It's everything from local business owners to reaching out to people that I just know and saying, hey, I know you have a skill in this. You know, I'm going to need you to sign up for a class. But then usually once they get there and they're like, I don't know. I don't know if I have anything to offer. And then they see these kids are really receptive, mm-hmm. and they have so many questions. So usually what they come in and think they're going to talk about, it ends up, you know, taking far longer because everybody just wants so much information. They soak it up. So they want to come back again and again. So we reach out to everybody, whether it's just because you live in the community and, you know, you teach in the community, you have a business. We want you to come and share what you are skilled at. You don't have to be an expert. You don't have to, you know, you just have to be willing to share your knowledge.
Right. And how would, if someone was interested in doing that, would they contact you?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Again, just dropping me a quick email and we can sit down and talk about what it looks like. We have volunteer orientations that I would say probably about every other month. And there is a volunteer packet online for information. And you have to fill out an application, do a background check, things like that, because you're working with kids.
Of course.
So those things are important. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, really, I mean, everyone has something to offer. And I really firmly believe that if everybody just gave a little bit of themselves, how much better would this place be, right? You know, it's, you know, if everybody just said, I'm going to take an hour and share what I'm good at, where my skills are, that knowledge just keeps growing and growing and multiplying. You know, from things like with Claudia, when we had our communication classes and customer service classes, mm-hmm. she's taken that knowledge and now she's teaching.
And now she's on the radio.
Right.
Now she's
on the radio.
Now she's really communicating.
Exactly.
That's right. And doing very well with it.
Thank you.
I just really think that what you're doing is so, so phenomenal for our youth. And even though it's in one area, it doesn't make any difference because teach one, teach all.
Right.
You know, there's a great Jewish, I can't think of it.
It is one, but I've blocked on it as well at the moment.
But you're Jewish. And it's okay.
It's been great. So you want to get the information one more time?
Sure. It's cupscoffeehouse.com. And you can select the event page or there's also a link directly to my email.
Thank you.
I want to thank you both for being here. Mm-hmm. Holly Gray, who's founder and executive director of CUPS, and Claudia Smith, who's moving up in the world.
Yes, she is.
Good to have you both here.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Very
much. We're going to take a brief interlude, and we're not done yet. We're going to take a brief interlude, and then we'll be right back.
Yes, we will.
A little music, and come back to a conversation with you all about books, music, and more.
Yeah.
Stay with us. Bye.
Thank you.
That's Mark Steiner's theme music. That wasn't Jimi Hendrix. What happened to Jimi Hendrix?
Hey, that's your music that you like.
No, I want Jimi Hendrix today.
I like him, too. Yeah, you know, Jimi Hendrix, I think he was, you know, he was a blues guy.
In the beginning.
That's right, in the beginning. And then he became his guy. He became his own thing.
He took the blues to the place he wanted to take the blues.
But that's the wonderful thing about our music, about, you know, African-American traditional music. It is not a dead thing. It's a living music, and you can take it where you want.
You know, I was thinking about that the other day. We had this discussion. I'm curious what you think. Maybe, let me throw this out there. Let's see what y'all think. 410-319-8888. I had this conversation the other day just about this subject, about music. And it's a really fine line here you can walk, right? And I was listening to a song, a band, I don't remember, some new kind of, it was on one of the XM channels, and it was a kind of new hip version of the model of the blues with a little old, kind of electronic stuff going on, and this very soulful girl singing who was white, and so you know, you listen to the song, and there was, I said, you can see how the power of African American culture music has affected that music and affected them.
Right.
One person then responded, "No, it was stolen from us." And on the other hand, then the argument ensued. What the two arguments are: okay. A, music that was usurped and taken.
Right.
Or B, and depends which perspective you want to look at it, or maybe both, or B, that African-American culture is so powerful and has defined America so much that it's difficult in popular music especially not to have African-American influence inside the music because it has become part of the culture, part of the soul of America.
Part of our musical vernacular.
That's a better way to put it.
That's right.
That's a better way to put it.
That's right.
What you said.
I think it's A, and you know, there have been some usurping, but I think it's also B. I think the usurping happens when you don't acknowledge where this music comes from. I mean, when you don't recognize that, you know, African-American traditional music has really been the foundational music for popular music, not just in the United States, but all over the world. And I think that now it is so ubiquitous that it is in so, again, part of the musical vernacular, and I'm 21 years old, this is what I've heard. This is what, you know, this is what I've heard. But I should also know, it's like how people come to the blues. I've met many people who have listened to Rolling Stones and have heard them sing, "I Just Want to Make Love to You."
Right.
And then they heard the guy with the lips say that, you know, this is really a Muddy Waters song. And we're really named after Rolling Stone is a Muddy Waters song that they're named after.
Right.
They were a blues band first, like Santana was a blues band first. But they acknowledged it like Eric Clapton. And then that's how people have gotten to the original blues folks.
America has always been a place where Elvis Presley kind of popularizing Big Mama Thornton's. That was usurping.
Right.
The Stones acknowledge where they got this stuff
exactly.
from. But in some ways, people don't always acknowledge it, like people who sing or perform musically, because it's become an ingrained part of the American experience for young people.
Mm-hmm.
It's what they hear.
I don't disagree with that.
It's even in literally the physical movements you see of young people. You know,
right.
It's not,
well,
it's
we
not,
created the downbeat. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
It's not like even when I was in Africa performing, everyone was still clapping on 1 and 3. The downbeat was created here. And I know some musicologists are going to get on the phone and go, yeah, okay, whatever. But
ahead,
you know,
get on the phone, 410-319-8888.
Get on the phone and talk to us.
Tell us.
Talk to us. But you know what? I've been listening to the wonderful thing about music is that it is accessible to all of us. And African-American traditional music is accessible to all of us. And even though it is the foundation of popular music, it is still on its own such a powerful way of communicating. You know, the blues by itself, jazz by itself, you know, the spirituals. We still sing the same spirituals that we're singing in the fields. I can go to a church and I can still hear, you know, Wade in the Water. you know, the same
right.
way.
Right.
Or I can hear Swing Down Chariot, you know, help me ride, or so many of these songs. In fact, I just feel like singing it right now.
Anytime you want to break out, break out.
It's making me feel good.
So I'd like our listeners to help us out with this at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts and ideas. Maybe we'll throw some music up there in a minute. We'll come up with something and they can find it and we'll throw it out there. But in this 21st century, I think about young people and how they're entering with a different mindset than they were 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah, well, you can't compare Elvis to Amy Winehouse.
Right.
But you can compare.
Right.
But you can compare this. When Eminem gets on the cover of Time and says Eminem saves rap, you know, we are still dealing with structural racism here, okay?
Why do you say that, Leah?
Oh, okay. And you know, if I have to explain that to you, Mark, you're not my friend anymore. No, just kidding.
A lot of people listening. Why do you say that?
Well, why do I say that? It's because rap was created. It was created in New York, just like the blues was created down in the Delta by African Americans to tell our story musically. It does not need to be saved by white Americans or anyone else. But that being said, it can be sang and performed by anyone. But I'm always amazed when I love Adele. I think she's amazing.
Who?
Adele. But uh-huh. I love Jill Scott, and I've never seen Jill Scott on the cover of Rolling Stone. Yet I've seen Adele on the cover of Rolling Stone. So as I still think we are dealing with some structural issues here, but I also think that young people did not live the same experiences of the 40s and 50s. But there's not an equitability. Okay? I'm really polysyllabic and messing it up.
That's all right. Don't worry about it.
You know.
It's fine. So, because I want to play some of this. Let me go to the phones. And so I'm asking the producers to pull up a little Adele.
Okay.
Let's pull up a little Jill Scott. And I want you to pull up the piece that Mark Gunnery, I asked him to send over, which was a little piece of Valerie June, which is somebody mm-hmm. new I discovered, a young African-American singer who mixes genres in a way
right.
you don't even know who she is.
Oh, there's a lot of that. There's a lot
of
that. Right.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Oh. Not quite ready for the caller yet. We'll come right to the caller. 410-319-80. I don't know what you're trying to tell me. You have to write it. 410-319-8888. And we'll get to these calls as soon as we can here. 410-319-8888. Right just here, SteinerShow@gmail.com. Because I guess what I'm saying is that...
Like Janelle Monáe. She is a fusion of many things. She's a rocker. I mean, but
right.
There are many... African Americans, not many, but there are two at least I know of as a performer that want to be country western singers. They want to be country, but they have not yet been allowed to make it in that business.
Well, we are being told we have to take a very brief break. Is that what we're being told right now? Okay, I'm so sorry.
Okay.
I didn't know what the hand signs meant, but now I know what you mean. I was so engrossed in this, but we'll come back. Jorge, we're going to come to your call when we come back. Let's put up some Valerie June, that piece that was sent over, and we'll listen to the sound, and we'll be right back. So what I'm saying is... So welcome back.
Yeah,
I'm Mark Steiner.
That was Valerie June, and I'm Leah Gilmore.
So, play a little bit more of that Valerie June for a moment. I want people to hear this, and we'll jump into this.
Right.
On the way to the phones, Leah, Jorge's our first caller.
Right.
One of the things about Valerie June when I saw her, first mm-hmm. she's a young woman, thick, long dreads, mm-hmm. grew up in Memphis, deep southern accent.
Right.
Grew up in the church, but is working with all these country musicians, white
right.
country musicians, creating this sound that belongs to her. And when were you, what did you say?
I said, when I was listening to her, within the rhythms, I heard Molly.
Yeah, I heard that too. You that know? Was in there too, right?
But I think that's the gift, you know, now. We were talking off the air that we're really in a transitional moment, that we don't feel that because of the color of our skin, we have to sing a certain type of music, we have to be a certain type of thing. But we do have to acknowledge the historical realities of the music. That's a different thing. Performers are no longer stuck. I mean, what people try to do as a performer is put you in a genre. But, you know, I know as myself, I mean, I look like a gospel blues singer. I mean, that's that. Yeah. But, you know, when I go to Europe, I sing Celtic or I sing folk or I sing a mixture of both or I sing Puccini. You know, I think we really are in a transitional moment that we are getting more okay. That is not correct English, but we are getting more okay with people being outside of the boxes that we have created for them. All that being said, there is still a deep underlying structural racism.
And racism, period.
That, yes, right. That does not allow for others to grow in certain genres.
Which is why at this moment in history, I think it's important for us to begin to really think of things in a more complex way than we do.
Right.
The thing that everything is decided by just simple white supremacy. Everything is just decided by any of that. That African-American culture in America is becoming so deeply inculcated in young people.
Well, it's American culture.
American culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, so somebody doesn't wake up with that sound saying, I said to you during the break, mm-hmm. oh, I'm going to sing soul music. It's just in there.
Right. Well, but you see, you have to learn that. On the other hand, there's still Jill Scott not on Rolling Stone, and there's still Adele
yes,
on it.
Exactly.
And even though Jill Scott's been around for, you know, 15 years, and Adele is new. I mean, there are a lots, and I know I've performed with some London folks, there are lots and lots of African-American women soul singers. But it seems like, wow, this white woman can really sound like this. Let's make her famous,
right,
you know.
Right.
So we're still dealing with, right. you know, the demons of the past. Yet and still, we're not saying that these folks are not talented because there's true talent there.
So the complexity of folks, what do you think? 410-319-8888.
I wanted to talk about my books.
We can talk about the books. If you can help, but let's go to Jorge
first. Let's listen to Jorge.
Jorge, welcome. You're
Thank
on the
you
air.
So long for waiting, Jorge.
Oh, listen, y'all are just marvelous. And in fact, that was so cloudy this morning, you know, and your conversation has made the sun rise. And
thank you.
Ooh. Thank you.
Mr. Steiner, I've been listening to you. I'm new to Baltimore. I've been listening to you, and I look forward to every morning.
Thank you.
And your beloved guest.
Thank you.
I encourage it. In my school, it's understood. I would just like to, I don't want to speak on the negative. I just want to encourage the antidote that you provide in this half hour of the program. Mm. Specifically, as this was just said a moment ago, that African-American music is United States culture, part yeah. of it. Of United States culture, and I say United States. We keep saying America. America.
Yeah, because America is all over, isn't it?
It's the hemisphere.
Yeah, it's the hemisphere. We do that a lot. You're exactly right.
And so America for the United States is excluding the rest of the hemisphere. Mm-hmm. But the point I want to make, just to encourage a conversation for more, this your program, Mr. Steiner, is a wonderful ongoing series of conversations that touches on everything. And I wanted to make a link to what's already been said in regard to the music piece. Throughout the Americas, what we have, so because it is complex, Mr. Steiner, you're absolutely correct.
Right.
But it's not difficult to understand because we live it. It is the living history.
Mm.
Forgive me, as your guest pointed to a moment ago. So the civilizing influence of United States musicography it's not just limited to this generation and so on and so forth, blah, blah, blah. It goes way back. I was born in South America. I'm of African descent.
Oh.
Born in South America uh-huh. and influenced by the United States musicography. And I'm 63 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Since a little boy, you see?
And I hear that story so much.
Yes, and yes. I want to take it also, it should the African-American community of the United States, I've lived here for 50 years, so I am part of the community. I am thoroughly an American, if you will, of Caribbean, South American, and North American in terms of multicultural and multi-ethnicity. Because so when we speak, I don't want to go off on tangent, we'll get back to the subject of the music, because it is the antidote to a lot of the social, psychological, neurological pathology that is talked about every day. But no one addresses the causes, see? The African-American community in the United States is highly admired, you see, throughout the Americas as well as around the world.
Right.
And we grew up seeing the African-American community. This is during Jim Crow and all that jazz, or jive.
It was some jive.
Superman, superwomen.
Right.
You see what I mean? And so here in 2013, you know, to listen to the negative side of, like, the racism and this and that and so on and so forth, stand your ground and all this sort of thing, these things can be reversed right away once we understand the causes. You mentioned a while ago, Mr. Steiner, white supremacy.
Right.
And I'll just be brief. Let's go to the root. It's male barbarism, you see? And we're talking about 3,600 years. We have this phenomena, the subjugation of women. Mm. Not being in the forefront as they should be. All our history books, all that stuff needs to be trashed because women don't appear.
Well, history is written by the winners. We know that.
Right. You know? There's a great George Orwell quote that I've always loved. And that George Orwell said, he who controls the past controls the future.
That's right.
He who controls the present controls the past.
Touché.
And so it is a battle for what we, for how we interpret and control the history that's around us, you know. And it does define us. And I think that we're in a really important transitional moment here in this history. And there's I think there's something we need to wrestle with more just live on the air, because I think that it's...
I think that's a whole show. I do. I really do. And I think thank you, Jorge, very much for your comments. Because I think he hit on something. There really is, when we talk about America, I get straight on this all the time when I'm traveling. We really are talking about the United States and the African American experience in the United States that has created this music. And because we have been here so long and have created this music, it has become part of the American, like I said before, musical vernacular. And many of this younger generation are not as familiar with where it came from. And it's not, they don't know that, oh, I'm singing this run because Bessie Smith did that, you know, in 1925. Now, that being said, I don't think that that's necessarily a great thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's a thing. I think all of us, I mean, I think that it is important that in schools we learn the history of what things are. But I also think that it says something positive about our country when things are not extracted as being something amazingly special because of race, gender, class, when they become, and I do not like saying homogenized, but when they become the culture. What? Because it's just like someone, I think it's like working for LGBT rights. We just want people to be culturally the same. No one's looking for specialness, special rights. We're looking for rights.
And I think that what's happening here, you know, what should be happening now,
as I went off on that tangent.
Discussing where the culture of America is going now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hear what book you're reading, so I'm about to bring up a book that I think is helping define some of this. Mm-hmm. But that in... people always argue that integration only meant integrating into white culture. And that was,
exactly.
And that was true. What integration needs to mean is integrating into a new American culture that is not the white culture. That is America.
Well, that is because of the whole hegemonic relationship.
Exactly.
You know, that's exactly it. And so, because it was very easy, for instance, let's use church, for example. I guess like the most segregated place still in America is on Sunday mornings. It was easy for Elvis. We can even use music. Elvis and Johnny, the guy with the piano. Johnny Lee Lewis or something like that.
Jerry Lee Lewis.
Jerry Lee Lewis. It was easy for them to go into a juke joint of all black people. you know, and it was easy for them to go sit down and listen to the music and become absorbed with the music and learn the music and imitate the music. But if I want, if Muddy Waters or someone else wanted to go to, wanted to go to a whole, you know, honky tonk of all white folks, that was not going to happen. And that's because of the whole hegemonic situation, you know, that it's just the way it was. But see, now we see that in the younger generations, the music is, you go to the audience, you see audiences now at rock concerts. I remember when I was younger. At a rock concert, rock meant white guys. Now, my 22-year-old, rock means life, you know? Okay. And I mean, I just did this wonderful collaboration with two wonderful women on Mobtown Moon, the music of Pink Floyd. And for us, Pink Floyd meant white men with troubles. And now, with the visionary thought of these two, Sandy and Ellen, who produced this, it is all types of musicians celebrating Pink Floyd's 40th anniversary. So I think as long as we start to know each other more, we learn each other's cultures, we're less segregated, then we start to see their stuff for each other.
So let me ask this question. I'm curious. One of the books I'm reading now is saying this because it's relevant to this. As somebody who's very controversial, and especially in this book he's doing now, but I've interviewed him before. I'm interviewing him on Monday again for this program. Is James McBride's new work, Good Lord Bird?
He's always controversial.
Very controversial. Yeah. And a man who really wrestles with trying to figure out the interaction of race and culture in America, and. I'm really. I haven't gotten to the point where Frederick Douglass comes in this book, but I'm about to. But it's.
Oh yeah.
It's about a little boy, who is freed in a very strange way by John Brown, and ends up going through this life with John Brown, and has an interaction with Frederick Douglass, and
who many people doesn't know as a white guy.
Has to pass as a girl.
Oh, okay.
As well as a little girl. Okay. So it's a really complex little piece he's writing. And he brings things in. People are very upset. Some people are very angry about this book. So I'm going to finish it and see what people are angry about. But he always attacks all the kind of nuances of culture and doesn't create anybody as particularly evil.
They just are who they are.
Right.
Because a lot of times people who we think of as there is evil. I mean, we've experienced that. You know, if we get rid of some of these guns, we could make their evilness less effective. Okay. But that was a tangential remark. Okay.
It's a political commercial by Leah Gilmore.
Okay. Not at all associated with the Mark Steiner Show.
No, I didn't.
Okay. But I think that I totally lost my train of thought, but I think that reading people like this McBride is so important, you know, because he challenges you. What he does is he challenges you quietly. And that's what Walter Mosley does.
Oh, yes,
popular. Walter Mosley, Easy Rawlings series is not only exceptionally enjoyable, but it challenges you quietly.
What are you reading?
Well, I just finished Walter Mosley for the second time. I went back and I read The Red Dress, and that's my favorite one.
The
third one.
He
has a new one out, and I just finished it last week, and it was exceptional. The way he makes race just a part of everyday living, but the questions he has the characters ask are so quietly challenging that I think it is such a good read for folks. But what I'm reading now, and I think so many people had read it before, and my life is crazy, and I know yours is too, so I like to escape a lot. So I'm reading two books at once.
What's that?
And so the one I'm reading now is called Outliers, and I know a lot of folks have read
that.
Why
do I know that book? Wait a minute.
It's by Malcolm Gladwell.
Oh, yes,
he did
Blink.
And Outliers is the story of success. You know, it's a nonfiction book, and it's just he interviews people who have been successful beyond successful, as we define it here in America, kind of in a capitalistic way, from the Beatles to Bill Gates. And he takes it, and he has this rule, this 10,000 rule, that if you invest 10,000 hours in whatever you want to be or want to do, then you are more likely, he said, reading across the book, 10,000 hours is a lot of time, to be successful. He said the Beatles went to Hamburg. Nobody ever heard of them. They spent over 10,000 hours performing in little joints. But that's where they crafted that sound and became who they are. When they went back,
right,
they were the Beatles. And Bill Gates, you know, he found a computer at 13. He spent all his time in his room learning to program that computer. You know, I guess 13 to 23 dropping out of Harvard is more than 10,000 hours. But it's a really interesting book. There's some controversial moments in it.
I've never read it, but I've heard the book, but I've never read the book.
Yeah, you should. You would like it. You would like it. I would love to hear from some listeners who've read it and, you know, to see what they think. But the woman who I am loving right now, I'm reading, her name is Tanana Reeve Du. Mm-hmm. She is on the order of Octavia Butler, who was her
mentor. Right.
And Tanana Reeve Du, who is the Cosby scholar at Spelman College. She teaches writing at Spelman College.
Uh-huh.
I'm reading another book of hers called The Good House. And she's brilliant, because what it is, it's a horror, suspense, science fiction book, but she weaves race so eloquently.
How do you spell her name?
Okay, you want it?
Uh-huh.
Okay, here it comes.
You ready? Go ahead, baby.
Okay. Keep talking, because it's coming. Okay. I want people to go out and look her up. Tanana Reeve Due. She's the Cosby Chair in the Humanities at Spelman College. She's also written bestsellers, The Between, My Soul to Keep. These are bestsellers, according to Barnes & Noble.
Is she American?
She's American. And she married another
sci-fi
writer. Uh-huh. And but she was highly influenced by Octavia Butler. Became good. She was her mentor. And just her writing style and what she writes about is so fascinating. It's such a great escape. Yet you don't feel like, oh my God, I'm in Harlequin land. You know, and I shouldn't say that. We love Harlequin too. Okay. We're not judging anybody that reads it. And I'm serious about that. Because when I'm on the airplane and that turbulence starts, I want to read something. give me the National Enquirer. I don't care. But she's, and I'm also, again, curious to hear other listeners who have read some of Tanana Reeve Due's books.
I've not read her ever, but I do want to read her. I think maybe I'll start with the one you're talking about.
I've been trying to get your intern the book Kindred two times. So, Andre, our engineer. Your engineer,
He's the engineer.
He's an engineer. He's so wonderful.
He's rejecting your book?
No, he's not. Amazon, isn't it? I don't think I have to. Right? I've done it twice. I want him to read this book so badly, you know, because we talked about it on the air.
You hear that, Andre?
I know. I'm not going to say your address, but I know your address. You got to get that book. I'm going to go buy it myself and just give it to him. I mean, I'm desperate for him to read it. But so that in turn, I'm desperate for you to read Tanana Reeve Due's book, because I think as a lover of Octavia Butler, you'd love her work.
I do love her. And pretty soon as we start Archive Fridays here in the Mark Steiner Show, we will bring our Octavia Butler interviews back on the air.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of my favorite moments interviewing
Can
Octavia
Can
Butler.
You just punch in my voice like I was talking to her?
Sure, we can do that.
You see, I'm in the middle of mixing the CD, and all we do is punch in things.
From the past. Pull her back.
I was at Morgan when I found out about her. So,
Leah Gilmore, good luck on your journey to Europe.
Thank you very much. Maybe I'll talk to you from there. Huh?
Maybe you will.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fun?
That would be very cool. Hear what's going on over there with you in Europe. And, of course, every month, Leah Gilmore comes to join us, maybe sometimes more than once a month.
Twice.
I got to be careful with that. It's Senator for Mercury Media's cultural editor and social justice fellow for the Robert W. Deutsch Foundation and founder and director of Umoja Musica. Thank you, sister, for coming once again.
Thank you, brother.
Good to have you here.
Always a pleasure.
Reminding you here on the way out that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, BQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end.
That's right.
More information at www.mecu.com, or you can jump on thesteinershow.org and click on their banner, MECU, Baltimore's Credit Union. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Henry and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andrea Melton. Joining us all week long is a very special intern we're having this week with us, Tara Smith.
She's a sweetie.
To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows, and hear the interviews, the information about our guests and the books that they're reading, just jump on to steinershow.org. You can also listen to and podcast all of our stuff on iTunes. Jimi Hendrix behind me. I love some Jimmy. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Michelle Martin coming up next. Take care. Jimmy, take it away.
Take care. Bye-bye.